Now, 7 o'clock, the Fluvanna County Planning Commission regular meeting for December the 14th is now in session. The first order of business is the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The next item on our agenda for tonight is our director's report.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a couple of board actions to report this past month. SUP 1506, Louisa County Water Authority. SUP 1508, James River Water Authority were both denied by 2-2 vote at the December 2nd Board of Supervisors meeting. That's all I have to report for board actions this past month.
Thank you. The next order of business is our first of two public comment sections. This comment section is for any items other than the items on the public hearing today. You will be allowed to speak and make comments during the public comment section for the public hearings. So anyone wishing to come forth and talk about any other item other than the items that's on the agenda, please come forward, state your name and address with a limit of 3 minutes. Seeing no one coming forward, we'll end our first of two approval public comments. And our next item is approval of minutes. The minutes for November the 16th, 2015. Do I have any discussion about the minutes? Any problems with the minutes? Or do I have a motion?
I move that we accept the minutes as submitted.
Okay, I have a motion by Mrs. Eager to accept the minutes as written. Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a second from Mr. Johnson. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Chair votes aye, 5-0. We have three public hearings tonight, and the first one that we have is FY 2017 through 2021 Capital Improvements Plan.
Good evening. The proposed Capital Improvements Plan for our fiscal year 2017 through 2021 includes 38 projects submitted by several county departments. The Planning Commission has identified 17 of the requested projects as a number one priorities for fiscal year 2017. The total cost of all proposed projects is just over $47 million, of which $15,806,000 is proposed for fiscal year 2017. The proposed capital improvement projects identified as number one priorities for fiscal year 2017 are under government, the countywide building assessments, for Parks and Recreation, the Pleasant Grove Picnic Shelter near the ball fields, as well as the Pleasant Grove Farm Heritage Museum. As for our enterprise, the number one priority was to design and construct the JRWA raw water system / intake structure. Continued on for public works, their priorities were to have the library and public safety, the combined potable water system, as well as installing fire detection and alarm systems for the courts and, I believe, the fire buildings. Also were the treasurer's building upgrades and designing and constructing a water or sewer system for Zion Crossroads. Public safety's number one priorities were the E911 computer-aided dispatch records management system, as well as the Fluvanna County Fire and Rescue Personal Protective Equipment Replacement, the replacement or re-chassis of vehicle apparatus, new thermal imaging camera replacement, toughbook replacement, as well as CPR assisting devices. The schools identified their priorities as the school board office renovations, the school board office roof, as well as an underground fuel tank replacement. If you have any questions, staff are here to assist you. Otherwise, I have the suggested motion.
Any questions for staff? I have a few comments I want to make about this. Now, I don't know at the right time to talk about this or not, but we were wanting a memo about the administration building. We had discussed this at our meeting concerning that we didn't think we could rate this at this time because the Board of Supervisors really had not discussed this item. In conjunction with that, when they consider this, they could also consider some of these repairs to some of these other buildings that could possibly be replaced by this building. Also, there was a memo that we had recommended about the computer instructional technology and infrastructure replacement. Although we all agree it's necessary, we feel it should be a budget item of the school board as it does not comply with the comprehensive plan about what can be considered for the CIP.
Staff is prepared to devise a memo along with your rankings as you approve them and deliver that to the county administration department.
Does anybody else have any other questions? Okay, if not, we will open the public hearing at this time about the CIP. Anyone that wants to make any comments about the CIP can come forth to the microphone at this time and state your name and address. Seeing no one come forward, time for discussion of the Planning Commission. I know we've discussed this numerous times. We were at our last meeting. We did our rankings and did a lot of discussion. Does anybody have any other questions or anything further to add to what I said about the memo we wanted to send?
Nope, that pretty much covers it.
Do we have a motion?
I move that the Planning Commission recommend approval of the FY17 through FY2021 capital improvements plan as presented with a list of funding priorities as prepared by the Planning Commission. Does that also include memos?
You can state that in the motion.
Okay, along with any additional memos.
Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a motion by Mr. Gaines, a second by Mr. Zimmer. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye, 5-0. The next item on our agenda is SUP 1510, St. Peter and Paul Catholic Church.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission. This is a special use permit request from St. Nicholas Learning Center, as it's referred to. It's a special use permit for an educational facility. It's located in the parish hall of the St. Peter and Paul Catholic Church. And it is a special use permit for the educational facility. It would allow up to 150 students. I believe there's 10 or 11 classrooms over there. They have a use group for this particular use, and fire alarm systems are installed in the building. It is zoned agricultural. You can have an educational facility in the A1 zoning district with a special use permit. This would be a full day, year-round school, again, up to 150 students, and with ages 2 through 6. School hours would be 7 a.m. to 3:30 p.m., and as part of this special use permit request, they are also requesting an after-school daycare that would pick up from that time from 3:30 p.m. to around 6:30 when some of the parents, waiting for the parents to come pick up the kids, and that's from K through 8. This is the location. This is a zoning map. As you can see, all the green here identifies A1 zoning. To kind of orient you, this is the Taylor Ridge subdivision. It does abut next to the Taylor Ridge subdivision. This is aerial photography. When the new traffic circle was constructed, you can see that in the lower portion of the screen here. And this is the church facility. You don't see the parish hall, but the parish hall is a fairly new building. I think it's about 8,000 square feet. Came before you all a couple years back for a site development plan. A couple of photos for the commission. This is looking along 53. There's actually two entrances to this site. And then the parish hall itself is in the background here. So a few suggested conditions. Again, they have the use group to facilitate this number of students in this building. So they're requesting up to 150. And their hours of operation from 7 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. Monday through Friday. And then beyond that, the after-school daycare part of the special use permit request would extend it to 6:30. And then again, this is year-round, full-time, all day. Spoke with the building official. He has confirmed the capacity for the use group and is equipped with the fire alarm apparatus. Planning Commission may want to consider additional traffic that's associated with this request. And with that, the suggested motion's on your screen. I'd be happy to answer any questions, and Ms. Dempsey is here tonight also.
Does anyone have any questions for Mr. Tugwell? Would the applicant like to say anything? Okay. If not, we'll open the public hearing at this time. This is the SUP 1510 St. Peter and Paul Catholic Church. Anyone wanting to come forward and make a comment about that, please come forward to the microphone and state your name and address, please. Seeing no one coming forward, we'll turn over to discussion of the Planning Commission. I have talked to a few people about this, and I was talking to the fire chief and so forth like that, and everybody that I've talked to seems to be that they are doing a very good job of this. In fact, that even that they have a thing, if an alarm goes off in a particular room, they can see it from the main office, they can know where it is. So they can go right to it and so forth like that. So some of the stuff that they talked about. I don't see a real...
This is in the new building they just built. Yeah. So that is
the
state
new
of the art as far as fire code.
Yes,
and
it
everything.
Is.
So probably no better place for it.
I think it's something close to 8,000 square feet or something of that nature.
I think that was the amount. I've spoken with people that attend the church, and I really think that this is going to be overall something good for them and good for the community too. So,
well, it has the blessing of the Bishop of Richmond, which is Most Reverend Francis DiLorenzo. It has the blessing of the Department of Social Services for the state of Virginia. It has passed the certificate of occupancy. And in the Commonwealth of Virginia Department of Fire Programs. And let's see, it has a report on the environmental sanitation inspection. And the water has been tested for the well, and it's no bacteria were detected. So I think we should move to for the Planning Commission to recommend approval of SUP 1510. For a special use permit to allow for an educational facility and after-school daycare with respect to a portion of Tax Map 18, Section A, parcel 7 and 7A with the five conditions as described in the staff report.
I have a motion by Mrs. Eager. Do I have a second?
Yes, sir, you do.
I have a second by Mr. Gaines. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye, 5-0. Okay. The next item on the agenda is ZMP 1506 Gardner Trust.
Thank you, Mr. Bibb, members of the commission. The next item is ZMP 1506. It is a rezoning quest from the Gardner Trust. And they're requesting rezoning from A1 Agricultural General to Business General with conditions, with proper conditions. It's in the Palmyra Election District. Parcel's located within the Ravana Community Planning Area. And it is 13.4 acres of Tax Map 9, Section A, Parcel 9. This is a current zoning map. Subject parcel is striped there, fronting on Lake Monticello Road. It's approximately a half mile from the main gate of Lake Monticello, which is here. Then Roadview Terrace is here, backs up to the subject parcel. Again, aerial photograph. Subject parcel in relationship to the houses in Lake Monticello. This is the applicant's site plan. They are proposing development in three phases. Phase one would be in the middle of the property, and they are proffering restricting self-storage facilities to phase one and phase two. Phase three is fronts on Route 618, Lake Monticello Road, and they are slating that for future commercial retail. They have proffered out large-scale retail, but it would support some retail there. This is phase two of the development. The applicants have conducted a second neighborhood meeting and received a lot of feedbacks in your, a lot of the email exchanges are in your packet. And they have subsequently redesigned the sketch plan to reorient the access easement in consideration of light intrusion from headlights. And they have also reoriented the placement of the storage units. This dwelling here is approximately 290 feet, would be 290 feet from the closest or the nearest storage unit. A few photographs for the commission. This is taken from 618. It is a heavily wooded site. It drops off towards the lower portion of the property. And this is taken from Mr. Carney's property. He abuts the property, the closest neighbor to the subject property. The day this was taken, it was a little bit cloudy, so you can't see the red ribbons, but there are ribbons that delineate his property line in relationship to the subject parcel. But as I was saying, there's a change in elevation there, and it slopes back up level with 618, which is in the background here. This is perhaps a little better photo, shows the property boundary, I believe, is there. So again, it's request to rezone the entire parcel. It's 13.4 acres. It's in the Rivanna Community Planning Area. The applicant has voluntarily proffered out auto sales with one modification. Automobile sales, if you read the definition, it includes vehicle rental. And it was always, I believe it was always the intent of the applicant to include vehicle rental as an accessory to the self-storage facility. believe he's doing that now. So he did modify on Friday to exclude automobile sales with the exception to allow rental as an accessory to self-storage, and he brought those proffers in today and signed those. So I'll place one before each of your chairs there.
When worded like that, that would mean U-Hauls, so people can move stuff to their self-storage facilities. It would mean something.
Right.
Automobile rentals. As an accessory, it strikes me that it would mean something like that.
I think that would merit some exploration, because that's, I have the same question you did. It would be helpful to ask the applicant what is intended by that, just so there won't be any confusion.
Okay, so in addition to the automobile sales, the applicant's also proffered out car washes, gas stations, laundries, again, large-scale retail, indoor shooting ranges. He's also proffered a 50-foot tree buffer, earth tone exterior finishes, and then on the one unit that I delineated earlier that is approximately 290 feet, he's saying no unit doors and no lighting on that building. And that's the closest building that would adjoin the dwellings in Lake Monticello. So again, he's proffered phases one and two will be limited to self-storage use. Phase three is approximately 2.7 acres. The front's on 618, would be planned for future commercial retail center. And the comprehensive plan considers this area one that is conducive to services that may support the higher density residential in and around the lake. If the rezoning is approved, site would be developed in three phases. Each would require a final site development plan. And they don't have to be developed all at the same time. They come back and as a final site plan in phases. In conclusion, the request appears to meet the intention of the comprehensive plan, and it's located in one of our growth areas as identified in the comprehensive plan as a primary infrastructure service area. Additional services and infrastructure are needed to accommodate more growth. Planning Commission may consider how this request does or doesn't align with the goals and objectives of our comprehensive plan. And with that, I have a suggested motion. I'd be happy to answer any questions, and the applicant is also here tonight.
Does anyone have any questions for Mr. Tugwell?
Yes, Mr. Tugwell, the 290 feet, that's from phase two or from phase one?
That's from phase two.
Okay. How far is it to phase two where the building would be on phase one right now from the Carney's home?
Looks like approximately 553 feet to the line between phase one and phase two, according to what I'm reading here. I haven't scaled this. But eyeballing the scale that's provided on the applicant's sketch, I would presume to say that it was very close, that number.
Okay, and then the only other question I had was the vehicle rental. And can I direct a question to the applicant?
Yes, ma'am.
Would you be keeping those vehicles on the new property, or would they be on the old FSS property?
They would actually be on both. The primary use for this is overflow situations, where I don't know if you've been through the property, we're very limited on space. We pretty much filled that out. And so when we have the occasional truck that won't fit on our current property, we would park it over there. And then as space became available on the existing property, we would move them, ferry them back over to our existing site. We don't have an office on the site, so it's going to be picked up for just short-term storage and all.
And that's for vehicles designed to help people move their stuff to your self-storage.
It is U-Haul, U-Haul.
Okay, well, and by U-Haul, I meant sort of the generic U-Haul, but
yeah, theoretically,
you're not renting Toyota Camrys and things like that.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, can I follow up on that?
Yes, sir.
I don't quite understand this, and I think it would be helpful for you to explain a little further what you're intending here, because I think this language is kind of ambiguous. What I think I understand is that I can go to this, you know, assuming this is passed and developed, I would go to this site and rent a truck or a trailer or whatever it might be to go pick up furniture or whatever property I had to move it back to this site to store it. And that's what it would be limited to. Is that correct?
It would be limited to that even more than that. The office where rental will take place is our existing site.
Now, I understand that, but I'm talking about the use. What I would contrast that with is I go to this site, pick up my truck, drive it to, you know, the furniture store or wherever I'm doing it, pick up the furniture and move it to my house.
Right.
Is that...
We don't control how the U-Haul truck is used. All it is we are a U-Haul dealer, and we have people moving in and out of our units using the trucks, or they will...
So your contemplation is that it would be, if a customer rents a truck or a trailer or whatever it might be from this site, he can do whatever he wants with it and then
correct.
Either bring it back or leave it. If he's going to another city, he can leave
correct.
It there.
That is correct.
Okay, I understand that. And the question is whether, with that clarification, I think that illuminates what the proposed use is. So that means that, I tell you the truth, I have a lot of trouble calling that an accessory use, but I don't know that it needs to be an accessory use, because if this is approved, vehicle rentals are permitted by right, as limited by this. But I think it really is not accurate to call this an accessory use, because an accessory use would be where you're only using the rental vehicle in direct connection with the storage facility. So I'm not saying you either should or shouldn't approve it. I just wanted it to be clear what's intended by this.
Would the applicant like to come forward? Because I do have some questions, and I'd like to clarify a few things, and I think it would be best for me to do it through you.
Yes, sir.
Yes. Originally, phase one was going to be where phase two is now.
That is correct.
And you did work with the people to try to move it phase one further away from the property line because of the it'll be the first thing and probably will take a number of years to actually get to phase two, right?
Yes, sir.
And the first buildings you are actually going to build in phase one will be climate control buildings?
Both. We'll do that in the structured layout is to always build in pairs. So if you look to the rear of the section, you'll see a climate control building, which means it has essentially a blank back. There's no doors or lights. Then on the inside of that towards the front, we'll build a regular building. That way, that regular building is screened from the rest of everyone from behind. They can't see it.
Okay. All of the lighting will be the cutoff lighting.
Yes.
Where it's what is actually required by the night sky ordinance in the Fluvanna. Also, in talking with you, I believe that you said that the lighting for the driveway coming down would probably be like 3 foot tall with just small lights on it.
At the very most, we might not even put that in, just depending on safety.
Tall,
no pole lights.
Pole lights at all.
No pole lights. That we've even taken it a step further than that, and stated in the proffer that we will place the lights. I'm going to call it on the front side of any building, such that there's never a light that you look up the hill and you see it. It's always behind a building. So we're trying to minimize the amount of light that, it'll all be reflective light if there's anything that they happen to see, if they can see a side of a building or something, the light reflecting off of it, but it's all towards the front.
Do you have any idea of, or just approximately, because I can't hold you to this, but how many years it might be down the line before you actually would get to phase two?
Yes, sir. I've done an analysis looking at our current projection plans, and we're expecting phase two and not earlier than about 20 years.
So phase one, and you really don't 20? Know?
Yeah, we don't. We think this, the front portion will last us roughly 20 years. If the increase in rental rates continue at the rates we've seen over the last 5 years.
And you're putting earth tone type stuff on the backs of these buildings to sort of mitigate any bright colors or anything of that nature?
The entire building, all the way wrapped around, essentially is a earth tone in both the panels as well as all the trim. We're looking at doing a tan type of, with a, actually sort of the color of Mr. Gaines's shirt.
Okay. The only paved.
Sorry.
Sorry, Mr. Gaines, we'll have to have you take off your shirt.
The only paved area will be the driveway coming in?
Portion of the driveway. We want to pave up to the point where there's a hill and an incline to give us better snow plowing ability.
And the other surface will be basically crush and run stone?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I know there's going to be questions about this, so I'll go ahead and ask this. This storage pond is required by the ENS and would be required to protect against runoff or storm.
Per my engineer, that's absolutely true.
Anybody else have any questions?
I noticed in the emails that went back and forth that the public would like to know who's responsible for maintaining the stormwater pond and checking it to make sure that it's intact. And it is, do you have an answer for that?
Good evening, Justin Schimpf, the engineer. So the owner is responsible for maintenance ultimately, and there is a deed that's recorded before the bond is released on this project that says the owner is forever responsible for maintenance, and that's enforced by the state DEQ and your local erosion control folks. So I think anyone could ask the local erosion control folks to go do an inspection. They have the right to go on the property inspected as part of this. And if there's any deficiencies, they can require the owner to maintain or repair anything they find deficient.
Thank you.
What about that? So is the, but dams are generally regulated by a group in DCR. So is this covered by them? Or because it's a stormwater retention and the dam associated with it, is that all covered by DEQ?
Yeah, the DCR dams are much, much larger. You know, Lake Monticello is a DCR regulated
sure.
dam. But this scale, I mean,
because it's stormwater.
It's stormwater, and it's relatively small. This is not a really big pond. So it's a stormwater pond. It's regulated by DEQ and then your local erosion control program.
Looking at the layout of this property and so forth, Is there a lot of runoff from this property toward the back?
Well, certainly in, I haven't been out there during heavy rain to look exactly, but we know the site, and this is an interesting point, I'm glad you brought it up, that site right now is wooded. When you do a development, we'll have to, any sort of development, residential or commercial, has to decrease the runoff rate. Actually, the state code requires that now. What's interesting is, if you were to do an ag use, you don't have to. So you can cut all your trees down, put a cornfield in, and double the amount of runoff that comes off your property. Nothing anyone can do about it. It's protected, or ag issues, ag exemptions. You do a development, and you got to build this pond, and actually, even though you have woods now, release less water downstream than you did prior. That's why the pond is the size it is, and it's not, it's what, half acre or something like that, which is not a small pond. That's not a big giant dam either, but it is necessary to have that size for protection of downstream properties.
Do you see any runoff from within the lake to this property?
No, not generally. There's a little bit of area from, I guess, if you consider the maintenance building area part of the lake, you know, there's some of that drains down to our site. But we'll essentially measure or compute whatever is there now and make sure that we decrease that once the development is completed.
Okay. Any more questions? Thank you. At this time, we will be opening the public hearing. Anyone in the public that wants to come forth and have a comment about this project, come forward to the microphone. State your name and your address, and you are limited to 3 minutes.
Good evening. My name's Steve Carney. My wife and I live at 7 Roadview Terrace within the Lake Monticello community. I would like to ask the Planning Commission to recommend denial of the request or require modifications in the design and layout of the proposal prior to this item being acted on by the Board of Supervisors for the following reasons. One of our main concerns with this proposal is the location of the 14-foot earthen dam and retention pond BMP facility for the proposal. Markers were placed on the property so we could identify where phase one, phase two sites were ended and to see where the BMP and dam would be located to assess the impact the placement of the dam would have on our property. Based on these markers, the proposed location of the retention pond and dam is highly visible from any location at the rear of our home. Our master bedroom window, living room, kitchen window, balcony, porch, backyard, and driveway. Based on the topography of the land and the location of the facility, we'd be looking at down at the feature in almost every interaction with our home. During dry conditions, we'd be looking down into a dirt bowl, complete with a metal pipe and grate. During wet conditions, we'd be looking into a pond of brown water and a metal pipe. At our request, the developer pushed the feature back slightly, however, only 25 feet from the original design. This was a nice gesture, but did little to mitigate the visual impacts to our property. We request the developer move the facility even deeper into the property to afford us some form of natural screening based on the topography and the distance. This will also allow for more room to plant evergreen trees for screening. If this requires a different BMP design or reduced development footprint to accommodate our request, then so be it. Also, because of the proximity of this feature to our home, my wife and I are concerned with the possibility of dam failure, which if it ever failed, would devastate our home and property. We'd be left to deal with our own private insurance to pick up the mess. My wife and I are highly concerned with this as we've seen firsthand what can happen in this type of circumstance as evident at the Goodwill BMP failure. The developer and county staff have assured me that this sort of thing never happens, and if it did, DCR would be all over it. However, I question this and continue to point to the Goodwill BMP failure, which occurred 5 years ago and remains unrepaired. At the neighborhood meeting, we requested a maintenance agreement on the dam be included in the proffers to ensure regular maintenance of the facility. We were not provided with this information, nor was it part of the packet in front of you tonight. Based on the design of this feature and its close proximity to the neighboring homes, we ask that the Planning Commission require the developer to push this facility deeper into the property, further away from our homes. We also request some form of maintenance to be required for this facility in the proffers. Thank you.
Anyone else wishing to come forward?
Good evening, members of the Planning Commission. My name is Christopher Perez. I'm a resident of Albemarle County, I mean, Fluvanna. I live at 739 Jefferson Drive. I'm almost one property away from Steve's property. The reasons why I'm opposed to this rezoning are the intensity of the use. Essentially, we're going from an ag district proposal of 13 acres, surrounded by residential lots, to a commercial development of almost an entire 13 acres. I do appreciate everything that the developer's done to try to mitigate the lights. I do feel like that's really done a lot for people to kind of get behind this a little bit. But what makes it easier for me to swallow doesn't make it any easier for all the other residents below me to swallow. I've got this 200 or 300 foot buffer of trees between me and the development. However, the developer doesn't have any. Steve doesn't have any. If I could zoom in on this. Yeah, I'm just trying to actually light up. Okay, yeah. So I'm right here, and I've got all this open space here with trees that are going to be preserved. So I feel pretty confident that it's not going to be as visible for me. However, you have all of this portion, which is so close to the neighbors, and the topography is so low right here. So essentially, you're going to have houses which are up high. It's going to drop, and then it's going to creep straight back up. And right here, when you get to phase two, it's so close to the homes based on the markers, you're going to see it no matter what. I do appreciate the light idea of changing it so it's all in the front. However, that's not in the proffers that I read. It did talk about not putting them on the back side of this building, but on all of them, I didn't see that in there. That would be nice to get that locked down. The colors were great. That was an idea that the citizens came up with. Essentially, this whole design has kind of been pushed by what the citizens have wanted to mitigate the impacts. I feel that the developer did a good job with doing some of them, but phase two is just still too dense. It's too close to the residences. If we could take it from this line right down here and cut this right like this, it would push these three buildings up to this point, allowing this steep slope to actually act as a buffer. When you get to right here, that's right as soon as you get to the top of the hill. There's hardly any trees that are really going to provide any screening here. So that's what I'd suggest we do it between now and the Board of Supervisors meeting. I mean, they're getting to use their land. They're getting a lot of money from this top portion up here at the commercial, which has almost no limits on it. They could even do a McDonald's, a fast food place. And then you have this entire phase one, which is, I believe, right where it should be. And then this really needs to be cut back. And that's what my point.
Thank you. Anyone else wanting to come forward, please come forward at this time. State your name and your address, please.
Jane Zimmerman, 15 Pleasant View Terrace. I respectfully request that this motion be deferred, at least. As I understand it, the Board of Supervisors meeting on January 20th is going to be a hot mess with the SUPs and the water issues. And I don't think that either issue really benefits by combining the two into one meeting. There are a lot of issues that residents still have and would like to address with this. Mr. Burns has done wonderful things trying to mitigate the impact on the on his neighbors to be, but I still think there's a lot to be discussed, and I think that the January 20th date is perhaps not the best time to make a decision on this.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name's John Halpin. I reside at 1 Roadview Terrace. I am right down the street from that. I just wanted to give an overview of where I live and why I live there. I don't know if you can tell by my accent, but I'm not a native Virginian. I was born and raised in New Jersey. One of the reasons why we moved here is to get away from that kind of environment, to be quite honest with you. When I first heard that business was going to be so close to where we live, I was shocked. And I was a little scared. You know, we chose, actually, where we live, my mother-in-law owned the location first. We moved there to be in a neighborhood with these people. You know, these are our friends, these are our families. So I can tell you that if something affects the Carneys, it affects us, and it affects my kids. I have three kids aged 8 to 16, I'm a little concerned about, you know, the pond, the storage pond being that close. I have two boys, and they're boys. I mean, I'm sure that would be an invitation to look around, you know, and to say, hey, maybe I can go do that. And sure, I'm their father. I'm supposed to keep them away from that. And I will guarantee that they'll get many warnings in that regard. But if it's not there, I don't have to worry about that, you know. Or if it is there, and I can appreciate that, you know, the petitioning party has done a lot of work to meet our needs. But I got to tell you, it seems a little harried. It seems a little forced. It seems a little weighted almost in heavier towards the petitioner than it does towards me, you know? And I mean, that's the reason I'm here tonight, just kind of stepping outside my comfort zone a little bit, just to be heard, you know, as a citizen and just say, look, I'm a little worried about this. Let's not force it. Let's not push it. Thank you.
Good evening, Catherine Neely. I'm the general manager of the Lake Monticello Owners Association. The business address is 41 Ashlawn Boulevard, Palmyra, Virginia, 22963. I am here at the request of the board of directors to represent the property owners and the association's position on this development. Again, I would like to echo what many of the residents have already spoken said, which is to say we appreciate everything the Burns have done to try and mitigate the concerns the neighbors had, even meeting out at the property. We do appreciate that. I would ask that we make sure the proffers are tight enough to guarantee the lighting and that we mitigate the concerns of the property owners who are going to be in direct view of that as much as possible. A bigger concern, not to the property owners, of course, but as big a concern to the LMOA is the stormwater retention pond. As was mentioned by Mr. Carney, we have had the experience of stormwater retention ponds failing around us, first being the Acres Pond, which was in the Acres development. LMOA, of course, fixed that because we had accepted that into the community. But the stormwater retention pond behind the Goodwill Shopping Center has failed, and even there seems to be some debate about how long it's been failed. According to the staff at LMOA, it's been about 5 years. Even the county says it's been since at least May of 2014 that it has failed and has not been repaired. The only reason it came to anyone's attention was with the heavy rains we had right before the hurricane was predicted to come through, which thank goodness it did not. There were concerns by property owners at the water rushing through their yards and onto the golf course, and our police department went out and investigated and found the failed pond. The concern here is that with development, and we realize that Fluvanna County needs business development in a big way, that we are going to see more and more stormwater retention ponds built on the properties around Lake Monticello. This particular property feeds into a cove that we have already dredged twice since 2012 when I became the general manager because it received such heavy siltation. A broken retention pond with water rushing in will exacerbate that problem in an enormous way, as we have experienced with the other ones that have failed. A bigger concern going forward for us is that the county does not have a reporting mechanism on maintenance of these stormwater ponds. There is not routine inspection. Mr. Tugwell mentioned that DCR regulates R2 regulated dams. They do. And I have to file at least annual engineered inspection reports of those dams to show that we have been inspecting them and that they are not in threat of failure. I am required to have a representative of DCR permitted on the property anytime they wish to examine them. And we have to operate our valve at least every 2 years. There are requirements, there are plans. And I ask that you please put those in place before we approve these type of developments. Thank you.
Thank you. Can I ask you one question?
Yes, you sure can. You can ask me as many as you like.
Okay. I see your concern about stuff coming onto Lake Monticello property and so forth like that. Do y'all have concerns about the runoff within the development itself? Because I was out there at this property and I noticed that this particular road runs downhill, so it's a natural gravity flow. Facing the Carney property to the right, I noticed that they have had to build a stone culvert to direct out of stone to direct the drainage coming toward their property. I also noticed two exposed drain pipes at the back of their property, at the back of their driveway. I got a feeling that they probably come from their drain pipes. And I also noticed some where the driveway had washed at the bottom of the hill there. So that was the main reason I was asking earlier about whether there was drainage from these properties onto the other property.
Yes, we do have concerns about those things. As you all know, many of you who are longtime county residents, in the late 60s, early 70s, when development at Lake Monticello began, there was very little oversight or concern about those issues, and some properties that were built in those early phases are continuing to pose problems. But the lake itself this year is engineering. We're in the process right now of engineering a BMP for an area. We're looking at stream restorations. There's a five-year program to put those items in place to try and mitigate this. As you probably know, we've had a dredging program since 2010. We've been trying to dredge out our lake. We have underwater BMPs in the lake itself. We've been trying to do everything we can to solve these problems, because we don't just get Lake Monticello runoff. We get everything that runs in. So it's quite an interesting
thank you.
Set up.
My concern was that it looked like to me that these Kearney people property, there was a lot of runoff going, and the day that I was there, there had been some rain, so I didn't notice it. So thank you.
You're welcome.
Anyone else wishing to come forward?
Good evening. My name is Fran Kearney. I reside at 7 Road View Terrace with my husband, Steve Kearney. I'd first like to thank everyone that's been involved in working and compromising with us to make this as easy as possible. But I feel that we need to have more information gathered from our community, our neighbors, and to defer this January 20th meeting so that we are able to gather more information and make a better educated decision. Our main concern is the pond, the retention pond. It's 50 feet from our back property. I will be looking into this as I sit on my deck, which is approximately 10 feet high. I really would like this to be deferred, the meeting to be deferred, rather. The other area I'd like to talk about is legacy. I talked to Mr. Carlos Burns one day when he was at our home, and he mentioned to me that the reason why he is building this facility is to have it as a legacy for his children and his grandchildren. Well, I admired that. We should all have tangible and wonderful things left for our family and future generations of our family. But I also have a legacy. My legacy is my home, my property. With this being built the way that it is, even though Mr. Carlos Burns has compromised with us numerous ways, this retention pond is still a bone of contention, and I think it must be looked at further. I also feel that I don't understand why his legacy is any more important than my legacy. So I would like to see that we defer this January 20th meeting so that we can work on this area a little bit more. I thank you.
My name is Jim Higginbotham. I live at 2077 Lake Monticello Road. Give you some insight on some of this. I've been in the moving and storage business for 45 years. I know what storage is. I know what perm storage is. I know what self-storage is. It's a mess. People live in these places. It creates tremendous problems. There's always foreclosures. There's lots of noise. There's lots of traffic. And you would not believe what people actually put in these places. It's a fact. There's not a need for storage places around. There's many around. Charlottesville has plenty. There's one up the road, Zions Crossroads, Fork Union, Louisa, many in Charlottesville. Most storage, Pantops has one. Most storage places nowadays, instead of going out, they're going up. Self-storage units are a major mess. I highly recommend that you not approve this plan. It's not a need around. We don't need any more areas like this. We don't need any more traffic on these roads. The property value will completely go down. There's not a need for self-storage units. It's as far as U-Hauls. U-Hauls and rental trucks are used for lots of things, for local moves, for transporting things to storage. As you know, there have been fraternities have been in taking U-Hauls and gone on trips. So that's U-Hauls and rental trucks are used for lots of things, not just for storage. I highly recommend that you deny this motion, please.
Thank you. Anyone else wishing to come forward to speak about this at this time? If not, then I will end the...
Excuse me, you didn't have an opportunity to have a 10-minute presentation around. Do you want to address any of these questions?
Yes, you can do that. Thank you.
First, I think I've never heard quite so much opposition to a pond. That's normally something that, you know, people want to see because it's necessary. And I think that the overall point on that's got to be that, you know, any kind of, you know, development here, aside from clearing the land and putting cattle on it, it's going to require a pond. You know, this land is in the growth area. And I think that's, if people feel like, oh, there's sort of a, you know, maybe they feel a weight's given this, is because the county has decided that, hey, this is a good spot for services for people. And those things come with the required amenities, and one of those things is the pond. And it's necessary to meet code. There are many, many pages of regulations that deal with how these things are built. I'll say I talked to your erosion inspector this morning, because I had questions about this, some of these ponds that have failed, because I told him, and he kind of agreed with this, that I've been 10 years in this business now. I've never been called to help someone with a pond that's failed. So it doesn't happen that often. Now, the examples that you've got out here, looking at some of those, they were maybe not the best construction. Some of those plans were approved well before we had some of the current regulations. Looking at some of those particular designs that wouldn't be replicated today, and we'd have concrete structures, the maintenance schedule is more intense, and it's got a lot more teeth into it. You know, you're subject to, you know, potential fines by DEQ for not regulating this. There's a lot more teeth in the regulations now than there were, and it really encourages people to maintain these things. So, we can't get rid of the pond. You know, the site has a natural drainage. You need to have a pond. It's for the protection of everyone downstream. Pond itself will provide a lot of sediment trapping is before water gets to Lake Monticello. You know, if you have other uses without a pond, and a good example is I'm working with the Homeowners Association in Earliesville that's facing probably $300,000 in silt removal from agriculture uses upstream. They have a big farm, cattle farm, up from them, and their lake is literally completely silted in, 4 feet deep. And so that's the kind of thing that you see when you have unregulated activities, and that's why we really don't see any particular evidence in past experience or in knowing what the regulations will require that this pond is in any way a detriment to anyone. The other comments that I think need some consideration is about the intensity of use. This is a very low intensity use. You know, we figured if it's 14, the phase one, 14 trips per day maximum, that's the same as a house and a half. So, you know, that is not a lot of traffic. And the idea, we do have a specific proffer with the lights. It's on proffer number 4. And all the lights are going to be mounted on a building that's 9 feet tall. They face down, full cutoff. If you had a few houses back here, folks would have porch lights on, whatever it may be. Those aren't required to be cut off. Much more visible than this lighting. So we certainly understand that, you know, there's a change here. People are used to seeing the trees. This proposal is different than that. But when you look at what is anticipated in your comprehensive plan, what we think of as a neighborhood service that wants to be close to people. You don't want to drive to Charlottesville to pick up something you need and bring it back to your house. You want to be close by to where you live. I'm sure that's who all Mr. Burns' customers are, people who live in around Lake Monticello. So we put these services close to people so they don't have to drive far. So it limits congestion on roads. And as a result of that, you're going to end up with this, you know, interface of commercial and residential now and then. That's part of a neighborhood, part of a community. And I think we're well over 200 feet to the phase, you know, phase one or phase two, and 500 feet plus to the phase one, our development for the next 15 years. That's really not high intensity and really, in our mind, not invasive at all when you compare it to other things that might be. You know, an R4 residential neighborhood there would be 40 houses. That would be the same density as the Lake Monticello. So 40 houses, 400 trips per day, no restrictions on life. That, to me, seems more intense than what's proposed. I think maybe Mr. Barnes might just take a moment to discuss some of the issues about the storage and who uses it and that type of thing. Thank you.
I guess I heard a comment one of the gentlemen made about how the storage is used and what it's used for. And one, nobody lives in our storage units. We have offices that have people located in them on the front. If you look, there's actually EMS numbers on those. But we don't have people living in storage units. It's specifically forbidden in the contract. We've never had a person living in one of our storage buildings in 23 years. That's never happened. So that's that. It may happen somewhere else, but it doesn't happen here. So we don't have any of those issues. In terms of the need, one of the reasons we're requesting to go ahead and move this along is already this summer, we were turning people away. People who live in the county who wanted to be able to rent space to handle their move so they could move in here. It's a 30-minute drive roughly up to Zion's Crossroad to rent a place. And the Charlottesville was basically full this summer. You couldn't go into Charlottesville and rent a place. It wasn't gone. People were coming out to us because they couldn't get one. So there is a need. We are currently in our low season. We have minimal units available at this time. Come spring, we are definitely going to be in trouble. And my engineer is telling me I got 6 more months after this is approved before I even get to break ground. So we're talking late summer before I can get a building up to serve the people of Lebanon County that are using our services, who we get constantly good reviews about how we do our jobs and how we take care of our property. So I think those arguments I don't think apply to Fluvanna County. They may happen somewhere else, but they don't happen here. Like I said before, the U-Haul rental business, that as far as this place is concerned, there's really going to be almost nothing there. Almost everything will take place over in our existing facility. This more than likely will be a standby storage, and we will ferry things over there. There may, on a rare occasion, get that. Where someone goes and picks up a truck over there and drops off their car. As far as the traffic is concerned, we are going to do this in phases. So we build 2 buildings up here. We're believing that these 2 buildings will probably be the first 2 buildings to go up. And so that you get the screening, we are talking about screening. So lights would be here, they would be here, they would be here in these areas. There would not be any lights on this side of the building, because that would allow people sitting up here to look down on this facility and see those lights. And we said, we're not going to do that. So we're trying to be receptive to that. We have moved things back. We are already giving up a huge amount of the property in terms of that we're just allowing it to be tree buffer. And going back and moving it back here just starts to make the process unfeasible in terms of long-term growth and things like that, that with the investment that has to go in this property. We have tried to remove the rights of use that people were concerned about. We've gone through and taken those out to the best of our ability. And as you can see, that we're talking for the next 20 years approximately, 500 feet from here back to the closest. That doesn't count all the way back there. These are trees. There's a few here. Oh, by the way, there is a maintenance facility right there. That's the Lake Monticello maintenance facility, which I believe we will be very neat compared to that. So I think in the long term, we've tried to be good neighbors and compromise where we could. And I would respectfully request that you go ahead and approve this motion tonight to rezone this property.
Thank you.
If I could just ask you a question to clarify.
I'm sorry.
So all the buildings, not just the ones that are closest to the adjoining property owners, all the buildings will not have lighting that faces towards those homes?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's something I promised them. I promised them because I wanted to make sure no one looking down on that building sees a bright light shining on them.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, it's time to open it up for discussion for the Planning Commission. A couple things that I would like to point out. I did visit the site. I question about the way some of the properties are laid out in there, but I have nothing to do with that. But I see where there's possibility of runoff coming down that hill area, so forth like that. But another thing I did, I went to look at what could be done on this piece of property by right. And I asked them to print off us copies about that to have tonight. The items that are permitted by right in A1 are agriculture. So somebody could actually put a little hog farm here, raise pigs. They could have a conservation area. They could have equestrian facilities. They could cut down the trees and fence it in and put horses out there. They could have farm sales there. They could have a hunt club there, which is probably would have a hard time being permitted, period, because there would probably be something about that. And I don't think you could do a hunting preserve. You could put a public park, a recreational area, a family daycare homes, home occupation building. And if somebody decided to want to cut down all the trees, they could set up a temporary sawmill. And they could run lights all night long. There's other accessory uses. You could have a non-commercial cemetery, non-commercial greenhouses. You could have private kennels. You could have a private non-commercial marina. But that would be kind of hard to do.
That would be kind of hard.
Bond's gonna
a rural cluster development. Shooting. Private recreational. Minor utilities. A temporary wood storage yard. And then residential uses. Dwellings with accessories. Two family dwellings. Farm tenant housing. Group homes. Manufactured homes. Mobile homes, single family detached, and then if they came with a special use permit, there's a long, long list of things that they could actually do, including car washes and things of that nature. What I see here is probably by the fact that this is in the planning area. People talk about the amount of time involved. Well, this has been in the community planning area, at least with me involved in it, since 2009. And then we redid the comprehensive plan again in 2014 and 2015 and voted it back in to thing. There was nobody to complain the fact that this was in the community planning area. It is part of the comprehensive plan that it is in the planning area. We also have to consider both property owners' needs, usage. We can't just consider one. I was thinking about it as I was laying awake thinking about this all night long on Friday night. So Saturday I walked around like a zombie because I looked at this thing. I read as much as I could. I looked at the zoning ordinances and so forth like that. And I'm thinking about if they did some of these other things, how bad it would be. But the fact is, in 2014 and 2015, we had neighborhood meetings about the comprehensive plan. Did anybody come about that, about this being in the community planning area. In Palmyra, they came, and we reduced the planning area in that. I wish the people that planned Lake Monticello years ago had planned a little bit better and put a buffer all the way around it, which would have been a great thing. But we can't go back to that. So what we have to consider, does it meet the zoning? It is in the community planning area. Some people talked about that storage places are all so bad and so forth like that. I've been to this particular other lot that they have, storage lot, and they've always been very clean. They've always done none of the things that were described I saw there. So, and Mr. Burns and them looked like that they've done a lot of things. Probably, if it had been me, if they'd have brought the first proposal, it would comply with a lot of things as far as the community planning area and the zoning and so forth like that. But I see where that they have tried to mitigate a lot of things. That's my two cents.
I have a question for Mr. Schrift. Where does the runoff go now? You can tell that it's a steep, you know, that the water's going to go downhill.
You mean in the area of the pond?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, it goes, you know, we're building the ponds sort of in the natural ravine. So the water comes down the hill now, and it'll go down the hill in that same location in the future. We're not altering the point at which it leaves our property.
So okay, does that eventually hit the lake, the Ravenna, another tributary?
It goes down to the lake.
To the lake.
Yeah. Isn't at the bottom of that hill, is that just a crevice, or is that a little creek right there between the two properties?
I don't know if it meets the technical definition of a
wet water creek.
Yeah, it's somewhere in between a drainage swale and a creek.
Is there a technical definition of a creek?
There is, actually, yes. There's a scoring system you go through and figure out exactly. So yes, there is. I haven't done that particular watershed.
So is the pond, retention pond, better than just allowing it to run off the property?
Well, it is, yes, in that you get, if there's a, you know, right now there in theory should not be a lot of runoff from this area because it's all wooded. Now, it does pick up some of that storage yard from the lake, and I, you know, just to note, when all that was built, there wasn't a requirement for stormwater management, so they just dumped the extra runoff down to the next guy down the hill. And the reason you have a lot of problems in a place like Lake Monticello is, as was noted, that kind of thing wasn't really considered as much as it should have been back then. So we may have, if there's any runoff coming from the maintenance building or something like that, that may increase it. But what we do is we look at what is coming off it today in the wooded condition, and we apply an improvement factor to reduce that amount when the development's done. And so we store the water and release it out very slowly or infiltrate it into the ground to meet the applicable requirements. But the main thing about that is that the peak flow rates, which cause flooding, erosion, things like that, are reduced under the development scenario.
So as an engineer, is there like a rule of thumb number you use for how much runoff, how much sediment this is catching? Because for that typical type of forest land there, covered in trees like it is, we would typically use a rule of thumb that there's a ton per acre per year of sediment coming off of that land. Is there a number that you would use that this cuts it down to half a ton, a quarter of a ton, increases it to 5 tons?
We certainly wouldn't expect any increase because the design of the outflow structure is set. So essentially, you know, the pond, right, the silt settles to the bottom. Over time, you have to, this acts like a forebay to the lake. Basically, over time, you must dredge out your own pond because you will let silt coming in. But in generally, you're going to see a decrease. Certainly from a farming operation, you're going to see a big decrease in, you know, silt. From the woods, I don't know that number off the top of my head, but you don't see a lot of silt from the forest. But you also provide you're weighted against what you start with. So you start with forest, you have to go improvement from forest.
Right. Okay.
Would you expect this pond to be, I know it's a funny question, but how much time would it have water in it?
Probably.
After a storm.
Sure. Something between 12 and 24 hours.
And then it goes back to being dry again?
Correct.
So the biggest, I know there were several significant issues brought up by the public comment section, but the biggest issue seemed to be the pond and its proximity to, I think, the Carney's property and some others. Just have you guys done everything you feel like you can do to alleviate that concern? Because you've been very gracious and doing the best, I think, to eliminate most of the other concerns, or at least alleviate most of the other concerns. So is there anything that can be done here from y'all's perspective?
Well, the challenge of the pond is you can't, it is true, you can't really screen it. Now, it's grass. You know, it's a lawn, basically. It's a slope of a lawn. It's mowable. You have to design it that you can run a lawnmower across the side of it to, you know, keep it cut down. That's one of the requirements. You can't let trees grow up for the safety of the,
right,
the dam.
Right.
So you can't really let it become overgrown and sort of screen itself. But you're limited by, you know, where's the natural drainage going? And, you know, water is going to continue to flow that way. If you start to, you know, regrade the site opposite the direct water some different way, it's not really possible here. But you start doing that, and then we start, you know, 6 months of moving dirt around, and then that's a nuisance to neighbors too. So we want to keep it following the natural terrain. That's good site planning, and that allows us to get the most effective pond in the minimal amount of, you know, size to it. That's the goal.
One other question, maybe. Because of the fact that this, what is phase one now, which used to be phase two, that is going to, surfacing there is going to be crush and run. And does that absorb, because of the dust content and the consistency of that, does that decrease run down the hill to a certain extent and slow it to a certain extent with absorption?
As compared to pavement.
As compared to paving, yes. You know, for purposes of being conservative, we count it the same. So when you look at their design, you count the stone the same as asphalt. But yeah, in practical matters, you're going to get a little less runoff from gravel generally.
Because paving, it's a pervious surface. Impervious surface. So, and is crush and run considered an impervious surface?
From a regulatory standpoint, yes. We count the water as though that's all paved. But there's practically, it's a little more conservative because you don't have quite as much runoff from that surface.
Reason I ask, because that's what I have in my driveway, so. And I know how it kind of works, so. Thank you. Any more questions, any discussion? I think people had concerns about time, but the planning department can't control time. They only control when it comes in. They can't slow down a project. Law would not permit them to do that. They have to take things as they come, and they have to work on them. And if the application is complete, then they have to bring it to us. So, and of course, this time of year, our meetings are a little bit different. So we can't control when Christmas is, and we can't control when Thanksgiving is, and so forth. Any other concerns or that we need to have questions about? Okay, if not, do I have a motion?
I'm going to abstain since I've got a self-service business, self-storage business.
Well,
okay, I'll make a motion. I move that the Planning Commission defer the attached ordinance for ZMP 1506, a request to amend the Flavanna County zoning map with respect to approximately 13.4 acres of tax map 9, section A, parcel 9, to rezone the same A1 agriculture general to B1 business general condition.
Ms. Eager, it'd probably be appropriate for you to state a date if you're going to defer it.
Oh, the date to February. Is that
the February regular meeting?
For the, yes.
We have a January.
No,
we have a January regular meeting.
January 27th.
So your motion then is to defer to the January 27th meeting?
Correct.
Okay. Do I have a second on the motion for deferral?
I second it.
I'm not sure you can second it if you abstained.
Yeah. Well, but having abstained officially, I'm just voting on seconding the deferral until January.
Mr. Chairman, if I understood Mr. Johnson correctly, he is in a related business. I don't know that I think that gives him a conflict of interest under the Act. If Mr. Johnson's not comfortable acting, he certainly has a right to step away. But I don't think he would violate the Conflict of Interest Act by voting on this motion.
Okay, I have a motion by Mrs. Eager to defer. I have a second by Mr. Johnson to defer.
Can we discuss for a minute?
Yes.
So what will we gain by deferring and not making the decision tonight? That's my only concern about this. Are we going to gain something?
Some of the people thought that enough time, they needed more time to maybe work out things with the applicant. And if that would make everybody more comfortable, that they had the time to do that, to ask more questions, or maybe for the Burns to take into consideration some of the things they heard. I know you've been extremely patient, and I can't thank you enough for being a near-perfect applicant in my esteem. But I just think that the people would be more comfortable, and it's 30 days, and as Jane put it, who's Jane? Okay. January 20th is going to be a hot mess. Okay. And I think the week later, I think we can wait that long.
Well, they would actually put the
Meeting in February.
Supervisors meeting into February.
Right. That was what I was thinking.
The only thing, I'm just trying to figure out what more, that Mr. Burns is going to be able to do. So anyway, we have a motion for deferral by Mrs. Eager. We have a second by Ms. Johnson. All in favor say aye.
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 Chair votes aye, 5-0. Did you vote?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
I vote nay.
Okay. So we have a chair votes aye, so it will be 4-1 in favor of deferral. Thank you.
So would this have to be taken up at the January 20th Board Supervisors meeting? It would have to be.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, that makes me feel a little bit better, because I almost asked that, but I thought I didn't want to muddy those waters. Because I understand that doing this at that meeting.
I'd suggest you either ask people to leave or recess the meeting.
Just call a recess for 5 minutes.
Can we call like a 5-minute recess?
Either one, but this is.
Yeah, well, I think that Ms. Eager wanted a 5-minute recess. So, we're going to have a 5-minute recess at this time to be able to clear the room, because we have other actions that we need to take care of, and we can't take care of these items.
So it would have to be taken up at this one. It has to be taken up at the next, and they could defer it.
Yeah.
But they would. It would have to at least be on the agenda.
Absolutely.
I'm fine.
And we
wasn't real happy with voting yay, but I figured. I'm okay with that, because they did ask for it.
We couldn't defer the 20th meeting, because we have no power over it.
Oh, we can, yeah, yeah.
We couldn't do that, because we had no, that's a board supervisor meeting, we have nothing to do with that.
No, the 20th would be a special meeting for you.
I know, but I'm saying, they were asking us to defer the Board of Supervisors meeting on the 20th, which we can't do.
Well, you couldn't defer the Board of Supervisors meeting, you could defer, the 20th is going to be a meeting of both bodies.
Yeah.
So can we defer our decision on the water?
Actually,
You're still a young man, I think you should.
I want to discuss that later, so, and when we get to new business, I want to ask a few questions about that, right. So.
Yeah, you really shouldn't talk about business now, because you are in recess.
I know. That's why I said I wanted to wait till.
Right. No, you're right.
Mr. Chairman, sorry for the delay. I got snagged for a question outside. Are we back on?
We're still in the recess for three more minutes. Yeah. Yet,
so. Enough.
We'll get y'all sometime tonight.
At least you know nobody's going to have any comments. Because there's nobody to comment. Unless one of you.
We just cleared the room. So, Mr. Payne, how have you been doing?
Well, I haven't killed a turkey yet.
You haven't?
Had a shot at one, didn't take it. Hmm. Killed $2.
Have you? Yeah. Were they in dollar bills or $2 at the same time?
Well, I killed. You don't know my wife, and you wouldn't ask that question.
Okay.
That kind of bucks, two is not even around here.
Yeah.
I saw this thing on the computer today. It says, if I have $20 and my wife has $5, she has 25.
Or roll to do anything. Right. Anything sharp or dangerous.
What's hers is hers, and what's yours, you share.
Monday, huh?
What's hers is hers, and what's yours is hers?
No, it's what's hers is hers, and what's yours, you share. You're pretty close to your 5 minutes if you want to go ahead.
Okay. Okay. We're going to end the recess at this time and call the meeting back into order. The next item is, there's no presentation tonight. The next item is a site development plan, SDP 1517, Paul M. Byer.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Bibb. This is a site development plan. Applicant is Draper Aiden & Associates. And what they are asking for is sketch plan approval. They are regrading tax map 62A8, and it's approximately 10 to 12 acres of 62A8, 62-1, parcels 1 and 2. And they are requesting sketch approval to regrade the property, to relocate soils off-site to the impoundment ponds site. Property is owned A1, and in this situation, the fill dirt is necessary in order to properly close the impoundment ponds and to accommodate governmental regulations. So they're moving approximately 350,000 to 400,000 cubic yards of fill dirt. So what the process entails. So the Brimo Bluff site is here, fill site, and then the Byer property, which is the subject property where really getting the fill dirt, is here. So it's close proximity. VDOT has commented that that's a good thing to decrease the wear and tear on the roadways to get the dirt over there. This is the applicant's sketch plan. Again, according to the engineer, using approximately 12 acres of the total site, regrade and restoration, and motion's on your screen, and I believe the applicant's here tonight to answer any questions. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
VDOT worked out the route that they thought was the best to haul this dirt on.
Right.
According to what I remember from a TRC meeting or something.
Yes, sir. I believe Mr. Wood, it's in your packet. Mr. Wood commented that it made sense from a standpoint of decreased wear and tear and not having to go from point A to point B. Is a shorter distance and to accommodate the goal of the fill dirt.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, before you go on, I have represented members of the buyer family from time to time in the past. I don't represent any of them right now, and I have nothing to do with this project, but I did want to make an interest of full disclosure and transparency that was the case.
Thank you. Would the applicant like to come forward and speak about what you plan to do or...
Good evening. My name is Mike Thomas. I'm with Ryan Incorporated Central. We're the contractor. Drake Braden is represented over there. As part of the regulations for closing these ash ponds, you have to cover them. And this is just the fill dirt that goes on the membrane that goes over the closure. We need about 400,000 cubic yards of soil to go over the top of the membrane. That'll be the surface that you grow grass on, and it's your final closure at that point. We picked a property, Mr. Byers' property, that is very close. I think it's about 2,000 feet, 2,500 feet from his driveway down to the entrance where we bring the soil in, just to try to diminish wear and tear on the roads. And that's really about it, unless you have any questions as to what it is or how we're doing it.
Yeah, I think it says it's 2,000 feet southwest from
right.
The road. Anybody have questions from the applicant?
So it's currently tree covered?
Some of it's tree covered, some of it's open. Some of it's been timbered in the past.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any discussion, any questions, so forth like that? I think it's probably a good thing that they're able to get the dirt from a closer site. Yeah. Been quite a ways back TRC meeting. That was one of the concerns Mr. Wood had, how they would bring dirt to the, and of course, I think they found out later that it was going to be a very close site. So forth. And in the package, he talks about the fact that that is good. The route there is good.
I'm familiar with the property. I'll give a motion on that if you'd like to make a motion.
Unless there's any other discussion, I'm ready for a motion.
Okay, I move that to approve SDP 15:17, a sketch plan of regrade the parcel to cut the property such that soil may be relocated off-site with respect to a portion of 10 to 12 acres of tax map 62, section 1, parcel 1 and 2, and 62A8, subject to the four conditions listed in the staff report.
Okay, I have a motion from Mr. Johnson. Do I have a second?
Second. Go ahead. Okay.
Mrs. Eager seconds the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye, 5-0. Okay. Thank you. We don't have any subdivisions tonight. No unfinished business. But we do have some new business, and I think Mr. Stewart was going to say something about a special call meeting.
Yes, there is a special called meeting, joint public hearing with the Board of Supervisors scheduled for January 20th in regards to the applications on the water intake system and the proposed pipeline.
Okay, thank you. Does everyone know about this meeting or have heard about this meeting that it's a joint public hearing with the Board of Supervisors on January the 20th?
Yeah, I think I've heard of such.
Okay. This is a little unusual procedure, but it's not by any means unprecedented. And conceptually, what you need to think of is that there are two meetings going on in the same place at the same time.
Yeah. The only question I had is nobody contacted any of us from the Board of Supervisors, asked us whether we would be available, or the fact that whether we could have a quorum or anything like that. So that's what concerned me. One thing that concerned me.
I understand. The problem with it is that if this project is going to go forward, it needs to be done before the end of January.
Yeah, but I mean, it's just the fact that I just thought that it would have been a courtesy type thing too.
Don't disagree.
What time this meeting is going to occur? It's going to be at 7:00.
7:00.
Okay. Does this take? Will there be a Planning Commission meeting a week later?
It will be a regular meeting.
A regular meeting.
It is an organizational meeting.
So it's the 27th.
27th.
Okay.
Right.
And what we just heard tonight will be heard then? I mean, what we deferred tonight will be heard on the 27th?
That's correct.
Okay.
So you don't have to sit there. Yeah,
you know, it kind of concerns me that we're getting involved into a contentious situation also. And we conduct our meetings in an orderly manner. We don't argue. We don't demean people. We don't call people names. And I've been listening to a lot of the tapes, and I just, you know, I hate for us to be put into a position that we're going to be put in to, because of the fact that what I've seen in all of these articles and so forth in the paper, what I would consider coercion and intimidation to get people to vote in a certain way. Although we handled it and had none of that, and nobody mentioned to us the possibility of a lawsuit or anything like that. So I just, you know, I am concerned that we're getting put into something that, you know, what I saw and what I listened to and what I read and so forth like that, about some of the stuff and some of the comments that the public had made, some of the false things that are being said, kind of bothered me, because there are people putting out there the fact that there was a public hearing about this agreement, which was an action matter. It was not a public hearing. There are people out there putting that out on social media, you know, especially on the Fluvanna Review site, that there was a public hearing for this, and that's absolutely false. I know that we were ordered by a 5-0 vote by the Board of Supervisors on September the 18th of 2013. The Planning Department, along with the Planning, and it would come to us on October 23rd, to change the comprehensive plan to match what they did. I also saw in looking at the package that originally they intended to, and I had to go listen to the tape to understand it, because in the package they wanted to initiate a change in the zoning where the people wouldn't have to even have a SUP. But the Board of Supervisors didn't even take that up because Mr. Nichols told them they didn't have to vote on that if they didn't want to. As listening to the tape and so forth like that, I just, you know, it kind of bothered me listening, because people have actually even put tapes of the meeting on social media of the last meeting, and the fact that some of the stuff that went on, And I figured, you know, the county and the Board of Supervisors is a political subdivision of the state. Therefore, they're agents of the state. And you get people coercing and intimidating people to vote a certain way. And that kind of bothered me. Do you think that I'm wrong in thinking that? Because when you talk about before a meeting, and you talk about, well, that's a possibility of a lawsuit, is that not coercion or intimidation?
Well, I'm not sure exactly what you're talking about. The prospect of a lawsuit is a fact. Mm-hmm. And that's a fact that, in a case like this, ought to be taken into consideration.
Yeah.
That fact might very well be a decisive fact in deciding what way a member would vote.
Right.
That's not necessarily improper.
The fact that I was thinking of the fact that they are public officials.
Well,
and the fact that
let me just comment that, you know, I've been coming to your meetings for a long time, and I've been going to the board meetings for a long time. Your comment about the meetings of this commission are accurate. You have an orderly, courteous demeanor, and I mean the commission does, and the commission's meetings are orderly and courteous, and they most assuredly should be. You get your business done, and you don't have personally intimidating or personally demeaning comments, and that's absolutely laudable. I'm sure that there have been times that everybody concerned, including but not limited to some members of the Board of Supervisors, have said things that they probably wish they hadn't. That's the way life is. All I can say is that your comments about maintaining courteous and orderly meetings while getting your business done is certainly the way things ought to be. And that goes for you and the Board of Supervisors and the Board of Zoning Appeals and everybody else concerned. And that's certainly an aspiration that ought to be brought forward. One reason I mentioned what I did was that you all you're in the same room with the Board of Supervisors. The Board of Supervisors is obviously the governing body. So it seems like you're not having your own meeting, but you are. And obviously you're involved only in two items for this matter. And the hearing will be joint.
So right, so the public hearing part will be joint.
Public hearing part is joint.
And then we'll have a vote.
Then the commission needs to discuss it and act on it, however you want to act on it. And after that, the board would take it up and take whatever action they're going to take.
Well, that was some of the stuff I wanted to ask you is, do we gavel ourselves into session, or does the...
Yes.
Okay. In other words, Mrs. Booker doesn't do it for us.
What you probably should do, Mr. Bibb, just to be orderly about it, is to discuss in advance with Mrs. Booker, just coordinating the convening of both meetings, and then and you probably just discuss with her just to make sure everything's in order. That since the joint public hearing, the staff will make a presentation. The applicant will make whatever presentation they want to make. Then the public will be heard. If there are any questions from either body, you can ask those anytime you want, because it is a joint hearing. Excuse me. When the public hearing is closed, I think it would be closed jointly by both chairmen in order to get it done. And at that time, the meeting would be before the commission. The matter would be before the commission. Board obviously would be entitled to listen to the commission's deliberations, and if they have questions, they could ask the ask them during the commission's deliberations. Then the commission entertains a motion, a second, and a vote. When that's finished, the commission's duties are done. You don't have to leave, but I think it would be appropriate to at that point to adjourn the meeting, because your business for that night is done. Then the board would take up the other matters, and there are other matters on this agenda for the board. You're certainly welcome to stay and watch it, but your role in those things is, you may not have a role, but to the extent you have had a role, your role will be completed before that.
And there are going to be two brand new SUPs. They won't have the same numbers that we had before, so they'll be actual.
That's right. And they may not be exactly the same. They haven't been filed yet, have they?
We have applications.
Okay, so they have been filed. I don't know whether are they exactly the same or are they certain?
We're still waiting completion on some of the documents.
Okay. So they may not be exactly the same.
Yeah, they may not be.
My guess is, just from my sense, is that they will be similar. They won't be dramatically different, but there may be some differences, some alignments, some locations, things like that.
So regardless of how we vote, decide whatever we decide, mm-hmm. People who are unhappy or happy with the way we've decided this issue and made our recommendation, they don't have a second chance to influence the board again. The public hearing is closed.
Right.
We do our business, turn it over to the board.
Yeah,
they do their business.
Many years ago, this county decided to have separate public hearings for exactly the reason you're getting at, Mr. Zimmerman. Frequently what will happen, and I think you saw it tonight, frequently what will happen with these projects is the commission's public hearing ends up being kind of a dry run and exposes concerns that citizens may have or members of the staff or the commission or the board might have, and it gives an opportunity for the applicant to check out those concerns and maybe iron things out so that they come more smoothly before the board. That isn't necessarily, the statute specifically provides that you can have joint public hearings. A number of localities routinely do have joint public hearings. City of Charlottesville, for example, always has joint public hearings. What I'm hearing you say is you think there's an advantage to having separate ones, and I think that has been the county's consensus for many years. But frankly, there's a press of time with this issue.
Well, I was just curious how long this was going to go. I wasn't asking the question as far as the great philosophical aspect of this, but thanks for that explanation, because it's worth it, good information. But I just wanted to know how this was going to go, and I think I got that.
Could I ask you a question? It really doesn't concern us, but something I read into the original agreement. I just want a question about, for my own benefit. It talks about a bonding for some of the funds and so forth like that. Do you have to have a public hearing for that? Or not, because it's the JRWA, because I know under state statute, normally under bonding, you either have to have a vote by the citizens of the county or a public hearing.
I haven't looked that question up lately, but my memory is that, first of all, the financing I think they're looking to pursue is special financing through the Virginia Resources Authority,
mm-hmm.
Which does not require, that wouldn't require a public hearing. I mean, excuse me, wouldn't require a referendum by the authority. And that's one of the differences between an authority and the locality itself.
Yeah.
Because the authority doesn't bind the full faith and credit of the county or of Louisa County. So I don't think they're required to have a public hearing.
Okay. I'll just...
By the way, there are two authorities involved.
Yeah, I know.
You've
got the
James River Authority, and then there's the Louisa County Authority. So,
yeah.
So neither county is directly involved in the finance.
Yeah. I was just asking that question because I read that in the agreement and so forth. Yeah.
Yeah, I understand that they do two and possibly three bond issues a year, that is the BRA. And in order to get in the spring pool, they have to have the, excuse me, they have to have their ducks in a row by the 1st of February.
Because I was reading it, it could cost us, according to the wording, tens of millions of dollars.
What would cost tens of millions?
That's what the wording in that agreement says.
I'm not following it. I mean,
that agreement from September the 18th that the that were done, that the county agreed to, said that the cost could be tens of millions of dollars.
Well, the whole project is certainly be tens of millions of dollars.
Yeah, I was curious about that wording when I was reading it. That kind of stuck in my head. It said that instead of any estimated cost or anything, it just said tens of millions of dollars.
Yeah, I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, and I don't have the agreement in front of me, but my memory is that there's a more or less established figure for the first section of the line, the JRWA line, and the cost of that would be, of those bonds would be underwritten, or be quote unquote guaranteed by the two counties.
Yeah. We don't really supposed to consider cost. We're supposed to basically consider the zoning and the comprehensive plan.
That's right.
So forth like that. So, that was for my own personal.
Well, the whole project is I don't know what the number is, but tens of millions of dollars is not inaccurate for the for the whole project going from the river to Ferncliff.
Yeah. Well, what bothered me in some of the comments in the Flu-Vanna Review to some of the articles and so forth was the fact that Mr. Ollerbrook was doing this for spite. Mr. Weaver was clueless. Mr. Weaver should be required to pay any, if it's sued, that he should have to pay the cost of the suit.
Well,
and, you know, number one, they were the two people that voted against the original agreement.
Those are. I think you characterize them as harsh comments. Only thing I can say is when you're born an American citizen, you got the right to say stuff like
that. Oh, I know. Anyway, I just, you know, I was concerned. My main concern was the fact that Mr. Stewart did call me and tell me what had gone on about it and so forth like that. And I suspected that probably that Ms. Booker would call me to tell me about it. And the only information I've had, and at that time I would have notified all the rest of the Planning Commission. But
that would certainly have been the better practice. The only thing I can say about that is it's been pretty hectic for the past couple of weeks.
Just to be sure, are we going to have a quorum? I mean, I believe I will be there.
Should we set the record straight?
Yeah. Actually, I'm getting ready to do that. But the fact is, like I said, I actually had a business meeting scheduled at my church, but I'm going to come to this meeting. So, I mean, that was one of the things that, and normally when I take a vacation to go out of town, I always do it between our work session and our regular session so I don't miss meetings. I've only missed two meetings in the last 8 years, so because I do schedule my stuff to comply with my duties here. Who is, of course, Ms. Eager will be on the Board of Supervisors, so she won't be on the part of us. And we may have a new member for 1 week, maybe, prior to, or 2 weeks prior to this.
Wow, that's not fair.
Organizational meeting for the board, I think it's the 6th.
And they have a thing there to appoint a Planning Commission member, and they'll only have 2 weeks to look at this.
The new member may very well not feel comfortable.
Yeah, that's not fair.
Mr. Gaines, do you plan on being there?
I'll be here.
Mr. Johnson?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So we are going to be there, and we will have a quorum. Sure.
So the Board of Supervisors at their meeting on December 7th decided to have a joint public hearing Yes. Because they'd already held two separate public hearings on the same issues. Their decision was to have a joint public hearing to save administrative time and procedure and process. I directed my planning director to contact you the next morning to let you know what the board had said. That was with the full expectation that if you or the other members of the Planning Commission would not be available, then I would share that with the board and they would have to make some other decision.
Okay. The proper way would have been, in my looking at things, that the chairman of the Board of Supervisors would have contacted me. But that's my thinking, okay?
Yes, sir. No, I understand. I just don't direct the chair of the board.
Mr. Stewart did contact me and told me that. So I did know that he did exactly as you directed him to.
Okay, sir. Yeah. I know it's difficult, and I know it's out of your norm, and having sat there with you before, too, I understand that, but this is an unusual situation that we haven't faced in the last few years. So.
Yeah. Is there any other discussion about this? Any other new business?
One other thing, Mr. Chairman. You stated, Ms. Eager, this is her last meeting. We appreciate you working with the Planning Commission all these years and look forward to working with the Board of Supervisors. But that does potentially leave a vacancy on the Board of Zoning Appeals, which, correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Payne, that can be filled by one Planning Commission member. Okay. So we wanted to put it out there that...
Yeah, I was supposed to talk about that. It kind of slipped out of my mind here. They had asked me about whether I would consider doing it, but I would like to give the opportunity for another member of the Planning Commission to be a member of the Board of Zoning Appeals. If no one else is willing to do it, I will do it. I'm not really don't want to do it because in my mind, y'all look at me strange, but I feel sometimes as a member of the Planning Commission and have made a decision on something and it's coming to the Board of Zoning Appeals, I think I would feel conflicted.
Well, I think that's the reason that
there's only one.
Well, it's the reason that there aren't more offices that overlap, so you don't run into that sort of thing. But the way I read the statute, it is permitted to have a commission member on the board, and I think although it might be inconsistent with the two actions, I don't think it's a conflict because I think
might know a lot about it to be able to explain a lot to.
Right.
So,
and you may be able to tell the Board of Zoning Appeals a different perspective than somebody else might because of your involvement with for example, if it comes up to a question of whether a given variance ought to be approved and the commission has discussed why a particular setback was chosen, it might be helpful to have your and I say you, whichever member is appointed, why that number was chosen, something like that. Now, the member is appointed by the court. There will be a recommendation by the board, and I suspect that volunteers will be taken. But the appointment is actually by the court.
So, Barry, are you saying you would prefer not to do it?
I would prefer not to do it, but I would do it if I wanted to know if any of y'all would be interested in doing it. I would rather be another member of the...
Historically, the meetings have been infrequent.
Right. Yeah.
I think
prior to this year, the last one before that was in 2010.
Yeah, 2010.
It was 4 years.
So I would be willing, but I would be gladly defer to Don or Lewis if they would like to do it. But I would be willing to do it.
Since you spoke first.
Like you were going to volunteer.
Okay. Yeah, I was.
So
not.
Mr. Zimmer has volunteered to
you sure?
To I'm be a member of the BZA.
That's fine.
But I really did want to offer.
It's not an automatic. I mean, he can put his name in.
We understand.
Okay, good. Because there may be other candidates for that, and then the board will select.
Right.
Okay. Well, actually, the circuit court judge.
That's right.
Board doesn't have to appoint.
The board doesn't have to appoint it, and we understand.
Okay.
Well, he need to put in. Have you got that on a where they? Or a
does request? He have to fill out an application?
Yeah.
We'll take his existing applications on file, and the staff can just load it up.
Okay.
Can you send that to me? Because I don't know what that existing application says.
It's the one you. Well,
yeah. Again, I don't know what it says because that was several years ago. So let me look at it, and I can. You know.
If there's no other business that we need to take care of, we're adjourned at 9 o'clock on the dot.
Well, it's certainly been nice working with you.
Thank you.
Yes, I want to say that we have really enjoyed working with Mrs. Eager the many years that I've worked with her, and I knew of her beforehand and the good work she did with the Planning Commission, and I'm sure that we're going to enjoy working with her on the Board of Supervisors.
Let me just say, Mr. Chairman, because I don't think there's anybody on the commission now that knew Mrs. Eager at the time we did the major revision of the zoning ordinance, and you missed the big time when she would bring prime rib for dinner before the wow. business meeting.
Wow!
She like didn't bring us. She didn't bring us nothing.
I had an intern working for me at the time that was going to these meetings with the zoning ordinance yeah. being done. And
that was back.
Mrs. Eager became legendary at the University Law School after those meetings.
Yeah, that was 2004.
I think it was 2003.
I don't remember now.
I think it was actually done on 2004, though, right?
We weren't accustomed
because it took us 5 years to do.
It took a while.
No, it was actually it was before that, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think
it
so.
Was 5 years before 2004, right? Because 2004 was when they were supposed to review it, and it took us five years to review it to come up to the one in 2009.
No, you're thinking of the comprehensive plan. I'm talking about